Welcome to the Ecclesia Leadership Podcast. This is number 28. I looked up the number ahead of time. I'm getting good at this. It's like professional and stuff. My name is John Chandler, and with me is my co-host, Matt Alexander of Rhythm Church in Miami, Florida. How are you, Matt?
Doing just fine down here. It's getting hot in Miami, but doing well.
Of course it is. Hot and humid? Is it humid in June?
It is. It is very humid. And we have just started it, so it's not to the really crazy, nasty point yet.
And Matt, do you want to introduce our guest who is quietly waiting patiently?
Yes. Our guest on this this podcast is our good friend Dustin Bagby, who is pastoring the Evergreen Community up in Portland, Oregon. How are you doing, Dustin?
I am well. Thank you guys for talking with me today.
Well, good to have you.
Yes, yeah. We're very excited. We, you know, we don't get to talk with people from Portland very often, so it's a neat experience for us.
I bet it is. Portland is a very unique place.
Yeah,
much like Austin and Miami,
in their own respective ways, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Well, we, you know, wanted to hear about what's going on at Evergreen. And maybe before we talk about Evergreen, share a little bit about kind of your background, how you got to Portland, how you got to Evergreen, and what that, get the big picture, 30,000 foot view of how that happened for you.
Yeah, that's a really good question. After I graduated college from Lincoln Christian College in Illinois, where I grew up, I moved out to New York City to help plant a church called Mosaic Manhattan back in 2002. And the church is now called Lower Manhattan Community Church, I believe. But I was there for about 3.5 years, was kind of an associate pastor, helped to get that church off the ground, and then shortly helped another one called Forefront Church over on in kind of the East Village area where I was living at the time, get going. Before I left and moved to Tampa, Florida for about a year and did college ministry at the University of South Florida. Basically, that was my first year of marriage. My wife, Kelly, and I just kind of took it easy. Did what was a pretty fun, easy job.
College ministry is taking it easy?
College ministry was a lot of fun. Compared to church planting in New York City, it felt like a big relief. It was good. But basically, in that year in Florida, no offense, Matt, but we knew Florida wasn't our long term place.
Fair enough. It is a unique place for sure.
It is, and we didn't feel like we really we fit there. We felt a little out of place. And so we had, during that time, it was kind of a discernment period where we were considering, do we move back up to the Northeast? Do we go back to New York to do something new? Or potentially move out to the Northwest? And we had never been, really spent any time out here. I'd been to Seattle once. So we took this big exploratory trip where we spent a good amount of time in Seattle, Vancouver, BC, and really only spent about a day and a half in Portland because we just didn't know anything about Portland. It wasn't really on the map yet. People weren't talking about it. There wasn't a show. and we spent a day and a half here and I really loved the feel of Portland. It feels kind of like a big small town. Each neighborhood kind of has its own unique features and quirks. And it just felt, it felt like an easygoing, slow-paced city that that fit us. But we happened to be here on Sunday morning. And at the time, Evergreen was about a year and a half old, meeting in a pub still. And I had argued with the lead pastor, Bob, while I was in New York on some internet forum. I think it was, do you guys remember Next Wave?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Next Wave, some online publication, was kind of emerging church type stuff. I remember a couple years into New York arguing with this guy, Bob, about some article he had written in the comments section. So we were off to a really good start. But I had heard about his church from that. And so we happened to be here on a Sunday. So we just showed up at the pub, sat around with probably about 40, 50 other people at the time. and had church with him, had lunch with Bob, talked about the possibility of doing ministry together. Really felt like we connected with the ministry vibe and philosophy of Evergreen compared to the more performance-oriented stuff we had been a part of in New York. And basically at the time, Bob was like, yeah, why don't you come out and start pastoring in the community? And as soon as people start calling you their pastor, we'll give you the title pastor. So that's kind of what happened. Kelly got a job out here that moved us out pretty quickly once we got back to Florida. And we've been here for 10 years. It would be 10 years in August that I've been leading it at Evergreen. So that's kind of what got us out. It just felt a real sense of a fit here, of feeling like home. We knew at the time there needed to be new innovative churches that connected with Portland culture, and it seemed like Evergreen was doing that, so we wanted to be a part of it.
So you started as a volunteer, essentially.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, that first year, I wasn't on paid staff. I was doing seminary at the time here in Portland as well, and just started helping out, setting up, you know, doing leading small groups, doing a theology pub. I think I preached a couple times that first year, and just slowly and very naturally worked my way into leadership. I think I didn't start getting paid for about a year and a half. I was doing part-time while I finished up seminary and then came on full-time right before I ended seminary. So no, it was kind of a slow, natural process and just building trust and relationships. It seemed to work a lot better just in our culture that's very suspicious of authority and titles and positions, that kind of thing. So it was a natural, slow process.
So I think Evergreen is, well, this may not be as true anymore because we've had some older churches connect to Ecclesia recently, but Evergreen probably is one of the older churches within the network, I would imagine, comparatively to a lot of other young churches that are kind of in the first couple of years or the first 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. But talk about, in the 10 years that you've been there, what have been some of the big kind of shifts or ebbs and flows that have happened within Evergreen, and kind of reflect about that. How has that shaped the community to y'all's sense of mission and kind of presence in the city at this point?
Yeah. You know, when I first got to Evergreen, it was largely comprised of young people in their 20s, 30s. I think there was only one kid at the time, maybe two. So our kids ministry consisted of two kids in a side room in the pub, hanging out with like one volunteer. And, you know, so basically at the time, everybody was available for everything. And it was a season that was a lot of fun. Just relationally, you could hang out with people all the time. You know, you had the freedom. Nobody had kids. You had the freedom to serve in a variety of ways. We had a variety of projects going on around the city. It was a really fun, energetic first, you know, 4 or 5 years that we were part of Evergreen. And so things started to shift, I think, around like 2009, when people, there's just this huge baby boom. And I'm not sure we were ready for how that would change the ethos of the church community. But, I mean, now, just to give you a little perspective, I think we have around 70 kids.
Wow.
That are a part of the community. It just seemed like each year there were, you know, 10 or 12 new babies born. And that continues. There have been a ton of babies born this year already. And it radically shifted what we could do as a community. We had to pull back a lot of our weekly stuff. Home groups became really difficult. What do you do in a home group where there's 10 kids in your apartment or house running around yelling and going crazy? You know, how can you have any kind of discussion? How do we continue to serve the community around us with all of these kids around? It's been a challenging adjustment. And I think a lot of people have experienced a little bit of disappointment in that as well, of not understanding the shift that has happened in our ethos. And like, why, you know, why isn't Evergreen like it used to be? We used to do all of these things, and now it doesn't seem like we do those anymore. Especially some of the younger people that are around. I think it's difficult for them, just because so many people at Evergreen are in the stage of life with one, two, you know, now going on three kids, to where, you know, I'll get a text from somebody, "Hey, you want to grab a beer tonight?" I'm like, are you insane? Like, maybe in 2 or 3 weeks from now, I can pencil you in somewhere. But there's just not the same kind of availability, with people in the community. And I think that's hard. It's hard on relationships. We've had to try to discover a new way of doing and being church, given the reality that we're all very busy. Evenings are hard. You know, our kids go to bed at like 7:38. There's just not as much room. So we've had to be more intentional.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I could talk for a long time about how the heck you get your kids to bed that early, but maybe that's a different podcast. Sorry.
Well, I guess it's changing now that it's, you know, not dark until like 9:30, but, So that's been a shift. You know, early on, one of the big questions for us as such a young and immature community was, man, how do we get old people? We are also young. We need some wisdom that doesn't always, but sometimes come with people who are further on in life. We need some older people around. So it's funny because traditionally the big question churches ask is, how do we connect with the young people? And we were asking the opposite question. How do we connect with the old people? How do we connect with people in their 50s, 60s who come in on a Sunday morning? How do we get them to stick? And what we found for the longest time is somebody, you know, in their 40s, 50s, 60s would come in. They would be there for 3 or 4 weeks or a couple months, and they would be looking around. It's like, you know what? There's nobody like me here. And then they would leave right about the same time someone else their age would come in. And, you know, they would be there for a couple weeks. They look around. Nobody else is like me here. And it would be kind of this revolving thing until we started to talk to some of those older people and just have a conversation like, look, I know there's nobody like you here right now, but just stick around, give it 3 months, and I guarantee you someone else will come in that you connect with. And that started to happen over time. And so there's been a big shift in our community to where it was 20s, 30s. You know, now it's kind of 20. We don't have anybody in college, I think, right now. But it's more like mid-20s to 60s. So there's a much greater range of age now within Evergreen. And that changes things as well. It changes, you know, just the language we use. It changes the feel of the place. So it's a much different community than it was when we first started. And the hard part is to learning it kind of, because we look back with nostalgia, or, man, Evergreen was so fun when we could do this, or it was exciting when we could do this. And so I think part of it for us, for those of us who have been around the community for 10 years, it's just kind of grieving, you know, the loss of those early days of the community, and instead trying to get excited about, you know, the path forward and what, you know, what our mission in Portland is now, that we're a community made up of a ton of kids, older people. You know, we just look like a more of a traditional church demographic than we did early on.
Have you guys wrestled with what it means to try to still include people who are in the pre-baby stage, or do you still have some and it's just the lament on their side? I'm asking very selfishly because we're seeing a similar transition in our community.
It has been difficult. We definitely still have a good number of people who are single, who are in their early 20s, who are just out of college, who are kind of looking around at all these babies going, man, do we fit here? You know, there's a lot of talk about diapers and bedtimes and mortgages and stuff that, that they just, you know, some of these early people earlier on just don't connect with. And so one of the ways that we've tried to help with that or help them connect is by just inviting people in that stage into more leadership type positions, to make sure our leadership isn't just made up of people with kids and, you know, married, basically married individuals with married people with kids, but it reflects more of the range of the community. And that's helped to some extent. I think we're still trying to figure that out, is how do we talk in such a way of just being cautious to talk in such a way that it's not all, you know, everything I say in a sermon isn't related to my kids or just like middle-aged man stuff, but speaks to a broader range of people that some of the 20-somethings can connect with as well. But yeah, that's a challenge that we're still trying to figure out, is because we don't want to lose those people. We've had a few people say, you know, we're not married, we don't have kids. Who do we connect with here? Is this the place for us? Or should we, you know, find somewhere else? And we've tried to encourage those people to, you know, we've tried to connect those people that are feeling the same way and encourage them to be involved in home groups and stuff where they will connect with some people that are a little closer to their life stage. But we've also tried to communicate the beauty of learning from people in different life stages. And I think that's something that that it's easy to miss. It's like we like to be around people who are like us and who are experiencing the same kinds of things. And so we just surround ourselves with people in the same life stage that we are pretty naturally. But there's a lot that we can learn. There's a lot that I can learn from people who are in their 20s, who are dating in this weird culture that I never experienced. You know, it's like I was dating before the internet, really, before there was online dating. There are all these new challenges to life that I never experienced, but can learn from, and ways that I can connect with younger people in that. And it's the same thing with some of the older couples or individuals in our church. I have a lot to learn from people in their 50s and 60s about life. And so that's what we've tried to do, is just encourage people, invite people over who aren't like you, who are older or younger. Invite, you know, if you're a married couple, invite some singles over, get to know them, learn from them. So that's what we've tried to encourage, is just to not, you know, stay comfortable with getting to know those people who have everything in common with you in your life stage, but just try to bridge that gap somehow. And that's helped a little bit, I think.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about Portland culture. I'm sure many folks have seen, or maybe you haven't, but you've heard of the show Portlandia, and it kind of makes fun of Portland culture. What's mm-hmm. Portland like? How is it maybe similar and different from the stereotype that's kind of been built up around it in the last 10 years or so?
Yeah. You know, I haven't watched a lot of Portlandia, to be honest. I've watched a little bit, and certainly they, you know, they do a really good job with connecting with some of the absurdities of Portland. But I think really when I think about Portland as a culture, there are three things that come to my mind. One, it's a very transitory city. People are always coming and going. And that, you know, greatly impacts the culture of the church as well. It seems like every year we send off 20% of our community, is what it feels like. And then people show up to replace those people. And so over the course of 4 or 5 years, you almost have an entirely different church community. So, you know, every 4 or 5 years, you're just looking at this new group of people that you're investing emotional and relational energy with. So, yeah, I mean, people move here for 2-3 years and then they move back home, or they move to the next, you know, big city, whatever that is. So that's hard, I think, as a pastor, because I guess you can see that in a couple of different ways. One, it can be really discouraging every time you have to send somebody off. Where you're like, oh man, I invested 3 years in these people. You know, we've got this great relationship, and now they're moving to, you know, to Texas or California or wherever. And it can be really discouraging because you're constantly sending people off. Or I guess the way we've tried to look at it more lately is, you know, what an incredible blessing to have been part of somebody's life for 2 or 3 years. And be able to build into these individuals and now send them off with our blessing to be, you know, salt and light in the new place that they're going. You know, it kind of feels like I guess, seeing it as a missionary sending center rather than just like a Portland church. But, you know, we may have these people for 1, 2, 3 years. How can we invest ourselves in these individuals to where if they do leave, we can send them off feeling good about what they've learned and how they've grown at Evergreen to where they'll make an impact in the next place they go. So that's how we've tried to see things, because otherwise it would get super, super discouraging and frustrating to see that turnover. But yeah, very transitory city. People come and go quickly. The other thing that sticks out is Portland's Portland doesn't have a great history in terms of racial relations. You know, people kind of joke that Portland is a very white city, which in some ways it is. But in another way, it's also just a very segregated city. You have pockets of the city where it's more, you know, it's like, oh, this is the African-American neighborhood and this is the Russian neighborhood. And, you know, more of the Hispanic community lives in this part of the city. And it's just very, very divided. You don't see a lot of places where different ethnicities are connecting with one another. And that comes from, I think, Oregon's terrible racial history as well. You know, I don't know if you've seen anything on NPR about how Oregon, kind of the goal was to be this white, great white utopia, and how that's really influenced the way Portland is set up as a city. And it's pretty messed up. So that's something that I think is becoming a bigger deal and highlighted, rightfully so. So that's another part of Portland that is often missed in the media. You know, that's not a lot of, I doubt a lot of fodder for Portlandia, but so that's kind of a thing that is a great opportunity for the church to help build those bridges, to help empower people of color in leadership. And so we've been working with, meeting with a couple of people. Leroy Barber has put together a group of pastors and leaders of a variety of backgrounds to talk about some of those things, to discuss how we can better empower and equip people of color. So that's something. And then I said three things, didn't I? Maybe that's the pastor in me coming out.
They didn't alliterate the racial and...
That's right. That's true. Portland.
Third thing. Come on.
Third thing. Don't pressure me, Chandler. It's going to come to me. I know it. Oh, yeah, I know. I mean, the city in the 10 years I've been here has changed dramatically. It is growing and changing. Everywhere you look, they're tearing down buildings and building, you know, new high-rise condos, or you know, traffic has gotten tremendously worse. It's just getting more dense and populated. It's just becoming more like Seattle. And so some people are leaving. They're like, yeah, this isn't the Portland we loved, and this isn't why we moved here or whatever. But there are just a constant influx of, you know, we always blame it on Californians. You know, it's like, darn Californians driving up rent prices. There's something to that because there are a lot of people moving up here from California. And you know, real estate prices have just, you know, I think my mortgage or my housing prices gone up 40% since we bought the place like 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. Rent's really tough, but that also impacts, obviously, this continued discussion with race in Portland. Lower income families are being moved further and further out. And even as they are moved further out of the neighborhoods they maybe grew up in, it's almost to the extent where there is no further out to move. It's just become an unsustainable place for a lot of people to live. So that is also, I think in the next 5 years, Portland's going to look very different, just in terms of who's here, of the way the city is. I mean, it's not going to help the integrate the city anymore. So, yeah, so that's kind of one of the big challenges, I think, of people living in Portland is just the absurd increase of rent and housing prices that's kind of changing the landscape of our city. So, yeah, it's an interesting place. And certainly, you know, you have the hipster culture that is made fun of and joked about on Portlandia. It's not uncommon to where, you know, I'm looking out the window of our office right now of where I can look down at this intersection. And on any given day, there can be a man playing violin in a giant chicken costume. He's out there on a lot of warm days. On the other corner, you can have the Darth Vader unicyclist with flaming bagpipes coming down the street. While on the other side of the road, a guy driving the General Lee can go by and honk the Dukes of Hazzard horn. It's just a bizarre place. And nothing really strikes me as odd anymore.
But not the actual General Lee, right? Because that's owned by that golfer guy, Bubba.
Correct. Yeah. It's an incredible replica, I'll say that. I mean, it's perfect. It's a very weird place in that way. And it's funny, you know, when I go to other places and see weird things, like I was in Philadelphia before our Ecclesia gathering, and there were a couple, we were having some cheesesteaks, of course, and there were a couple of guys dressed up as giant bananas. They were kind of running around, and people were going crazy. Like, this is so funny, the giant bananas. And I almost didn't even notice it. It's so, you know, just to see weird stuff like that is so common anymore that a couple of giant bananas just doesn't do anything for me. But it was kind of those moments that I realized just how bizarre Portland can be.
So do you, well, not do you, I know that from you talking about your transition onto the staff, and I know, you know, Bob works part-time for Ecclesia now. So what does the staff structure look like there? What are the paid versus volunteer leadership roles that you have, and what roles do people play?
Yeah. Several years ago, we kind of changed the structure of leadership. For a while, Bob was the lead pastor, and the structure just reflected that. But I think when Bob went down in hours, we kind of shifted into more of a team leadership approach where we focus more on the APES stuff, of why don't we structure leadership as a team, and just split that up depending on our gifts. So, you know, with like teaching stuff, anything that has to do with teaching kind of goes through me. That's the area I'm gifted in and that I focus on. Bob's more the apostolic leader. He's more of the vision guy. He's more the one who communicates vision and helps get our community there. So, you know, he's still part-time. I think he's 30 hours a week. But the number of hours doesn't really affect as much as does just what our gifts are. So that's how we split up leadership. We've got a children's director that's part-time, a worship person that's part-time, and another woman who does spiritual direction is part-time. So we have a lot of part-time staff, but it's all very focused on gifts rather than some kind of structure of authority per se. Our authority really comes from our gifts. So, and that's worked really well relationally with our staff. I think we're in a good place. But we have five staff who are either, you know, I'm the only part-time staff. Five staff, and then we have five elders.
Wait, you mean the only full-time, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Did I say part-time?
I did not follow well or something.
Sorry. No, I'm the only full-time staff. But we have five people on staff, and then we have five elders. And I think four... Six elders. And four of the six of those are staff right now. So we're a little out of balance that way. And then the elder team is, we kind of have that same idea of focusing on APES stuff. We try to make sure there are people with those gifts represented on our elder team. And that's, I think, has been beneficial as well.
All right. So I just know from talking with you other times, and I know the history, you know, one of the things that made Evergreen famous way back when, besides the Bob blog, but was Evergreen started in a pub, mm-hmm. and you're no longer in a pub. But just tell us a little bit about the history and the challenges you guys have finding meeting spaces.
Yeah. You know, from the beginning, the pub was a very intentional choice. We met there for 10 years. We wanted to be in a place where people just naturally hung out anyway. And as I think most people know, Portland is the beer capital of the country, if not the world. There's more breweries here per capita than anywhere in the world. So pub scene's huge. There are new pubs opening all the time. And I think from the beginning, the idea is, well, why not just do church where people are already naturally at anyway, where they feel comfortable, where they hang out? And so we met in the Lucky Lab pub for 10 years because of that. And there are a lot of people that are part of Evergreen because they, you know, some people are totally had no history with the church and they're like, well, yeah, there's this church in a pub. Like we should check that out. It sounds like our thing. Or people that, were formerly church that had been hurt or burned in some way that they saw there was a church that met in a pub and thought, well, man, if this doesn't work for us, I don't know what will. Like it was kind of their last shot at church. And so it helped in terms of our mission because those were the kind of people that we wanted to be reaching and the kind of people that make up a large percentage of who Portlanders are. And so the pub worked very well for that. You know, one of the rubs though, is when you meet in a pub and you start having kids and, you know, you've got 50, 60 kids that are part of your community, a little side room in the pub just doesn't work anymore. And it got to be a little chaotic. So, as we've been thinking about new space, one of the values or one of our priorities was still to try to meet in a place that was non-conventional. There are a lot of church buildings that are available on Sunday evenings, but we intentionally, in trying to continue to reach the people we've always been reaching, have stayed away from that. And we found this nightclub space that had some separate kids' room that seemed to work at least for the time. And you know, I've told you some of the funny stuff. There's a lot of cannabis events there on the weekends, so it's not uncommon to walk in the space and have to clear it out a bit. We've had some mellow Sundays in there, but you know, AJ, I think our friend AJ says that you guys, he's heard some of these stories. Says you guys are so incarnational. And I was like, that's a very positive way to look at it. But yeah, so we meet in a nightclub space right now. We're still looking at something that might be a little more permanent fit. Haven't found that yet. But one of the big things is in Portland, like I said, prices are going through the roof on everything. So it's really difficult to find reasonable space. A lot of the spaces we've looked at, we've had the same problem. And the problem is the owner saying, well, I can do a 1 or 2 year lease, but then we're going to tear the building down and build a new development. And that's the story on almost everything we've looked at, is everything's being torn down and rebuilt because it's just worth so much right now. So it's a tough day for a church to find space in Portland. So that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah. But ideally, I mean, you guys, you'd be more than content to find a place that's your own place, or you always see yourself just trying to lease from some other space?
Yeah, we would love to find a place that is our own. I mean, we would love to purchase or do a long-term lease on a warehouse space that we can convert into not just our church space, but we'd love to partner with other nonprofits or small businesses that would want to share that same space with us. We've talked to a really cool youth nonprofit called Breaking Cycles that helps to equip homeless youth with some skills and bike repair and doing barista stuff. So they have their own coffee roaster. So we've talked with them about partnering and having a space together where they would have a bike shop, where they would have a coffee space in the front, where they could train youth, give them some marketable skills for Portland while we have our church space on Sunday. So we're trying to find some kind of creative partnership that will work and will be slightly unique and still in the non-traditional space. We'll see if that happens.
It's a purely selfish question on my part, just because I know you're a reader. Why don't you talk about, because we'll wind down here, but talk about some of the things you've been reading and enjoying that we should all go after.
Yeah. You know, right now I'm reading a book called The Sheltering Sky by Paul Bowles, who wrote this book. It's kind of a book about these entitled American tourists who are touring like Tangier, Northern Morocco, Northern Africa area, and basically their own lack of knowledge of the culture and entitlement. It kind of turns out to be their downfall. It's inspired a lot of hipster trips to Northern Africa. So I wanted to read it because it seems like it connects with Portland. I've known more than a few who have taken that trip because of this book, despite the disasters that happen in it. That's been a great book. You know, I hesitate to even say this, John, but I have really been on a huge John Updike kick. I don't know if you've read any John Updike.
I have not.
He is an incredible writer. But I just read his most famous series, the Rabbit series, which two of those books won the Pulitzer. And it is basically a journey through a man's life starting in his 20s. And that goes in the course of these four books through retirement. And it is fantastic writing, but it is earthy. It is spiritual. It is graphic in places. And that's why I hesitate to recommend it, but it is very real and captures, I think, the desires, particularly the warring desires inside of a man like I've never read before. John Updike was, I think he was an Episcopal rector in New England around the Boston area, from what I understand. So he's got a church background, and so his writing is kind of littered very slightly with these themes of faith, despite the very earthy and just graphic desires that he portrays through his novels. But I'm on a huge Updike kick. I'm going to read his memoirs this summer. I'm really excited about that. But those are kind of the couple of things I've been reading lately.
All right. You got any final wrap-up questions, Matt?
Well, I was just going to ask how Evergreen originally connected to Ecclesia and kind of what that's been like for the community and for the leadership.
Yeah, man, that's a great question, Matt. I know Bob was the one that originally connected with somebody at Ecclesia. And so he's the one that I'm not even sure who his original contact was. Was it you?
Yeah, it was.
Okay. And then he kind of brought us out to the Ecclesia National Gathering in Chevy Chase one year. And started to get to know people. And it was just kind of in the course of those relationships that it felt like, wow, like this is our tribe. We fit here. We've had a hard time finding a place where we fit because we wouldn't describe ourselves as a progressive liberal church, but we're also not a particularly conservative church. You know, we have women in leadership. And that kind of crosses us off the list of a lot of church planning networks right there. So we've had a hard time just finding where we fit. And Ecclesia has been a beautiful fit in that sense. So, you know, for me personally, Ecclesia has been a place of establishing some really great relationships. I really look forward to the gathering each year. You know, I talk with some guys throughout the year who are a part of Ecclesia. You know, there have been a number of times where I've had a question or a problem that has come up in ministry to where my first instinct has been, oh, man, I need to call so-and-so. I need to call, you know, I need to give somebody an email that is a part of the network. So it's been a great source of encouragement and wisdom and help in ministry. I know there are a variety of people I can call if I have a question or we've got a problem come up. So that's been a huge help for me personally. And I think for Evergreen, I think it's helped to create and establish some kind of identity that is greater than just ourselves. For the longest time, I think Evergreen was, we were just kind of an independent an independent church that didn't really have a history or a community of its own. And so I think being a part of Ecclesia has helped to define some of those characteristics of who we are as a church community a little bit more. We've got some brother and sister communities that we feel a part of which has been good for us.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Dustin.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you for taking the time.
I hope that at least 12 to 13 people listen to this.
Easily. Once your name is connected to it, it'll probably bring down the server.
After that stellar Sermon Smith one, I imagine this one will be a really hot item.
Absolutely. All right. Well, the one last question we should ask is, people want to keep up with you or Evergreen, where can they find all of that to learn more?
Yeah, if people want to check out Evergreen, what that's about, it's evergreenpdx.org. And I'm avidly making semi-mediocre jokes on Twitter. So you can just find that at Twitter, Dustin Bagby.
At Dustin Bagby.
Yeah, at Dustin Bagby.
All right, man. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, blessings.